The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Curtis Subaru Studios and streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. It's an extra big, gigantic show for you today because here's our schedule. We are going to be doing The Dory Monson Show from noon till 2. And then right at 2 o'clock, I will be joined by all of my Seahawk pregame co-hosts, Paul Moyer, Ray Roberts, Jordan Babineau, Michael Bumpus. And we will all take you down to kickoff between the Seahawks and the Chicago Bears, Monday Night Football. That's going to be kind of exciting. See if the Seahawks can get their first win of the season tonight against the Bears. And then after the game, we'll do a post-game show till about midnight tonight. So I'm not going anywhere for a long, long time tonight.
I know. You did pack a suitcase. I thought you were going on a trip.
Suitcase. Yes, I'm ready. I'm ready to rumble here. But I got a lot of news to talk about. We got a big show here for you. So let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I told you so.
Yeah, this has been one of the most perfect, prescient predictions, analysis that we've ever done in the history of The Dory Monson Show. It was 18 years ago when my tipster told me something that I couldn't believe. Dory, do you realize that there is an effort underway in the next 20 years to turn every single road in the Puget Sound region into a toll road? And I went, nah, come on. But I knew the credibility of my source, and I started seeing the documents. I started saying from my mole who was in the meetings, the Puget Sound Regional Council plan to turn every single road in this region, in the state, into a toll road. You want to drive into Seattle during morning rush hour? $20. You want to drive to your kid's elementary school to watch their performance in a play? 25 cents. But we will get you for every inch you drive because they hate people in cars. And people always ask me, why would they hate people in cars? Well, because, and I'm very serious about this, the people who so desperately need to have cars and for whom mass transit does not work in their life are families with kids. If you're a dink, double income, no kids, you can take an hour 20. Take a train on one leg and then wait for a bus on the other leg and then walk to 8 blocks to your destination. You can do that. If you're double income, no kids. If you're a parent who has a kid that plays soccer, plays basketball, volleyball, football, piano, flute, they have music lessons, they're involved in drama, you carpool with other parents, so you only have to drive a couple times a week. But you got to drive. If you want to see your kids play games, you know, if they're on the JV team that starts at 5:30 in the afternoon, well, you can't take a hour, 45-minute train-bus combo to go watch your kid. So, getting back to the main question, so why do local leaders have contempt for people who have to drive cars? Well, because they don't like families with kids. And I mean this quite literally. The people who are in power in Seattle and King County in particular, so many of them are childless for a variety of reasons. And their political philosophy is all about building this transportation, bicycle-only utopia that becomes increasingly unfriendly for families with kids. And this all happened, it all started back in 1978 when Seattle implemented busing. For social justice reasons, Seattle decided to bus kids from Ballard down to Cleveland High School, and what used to be a five-minute ride to school became an hour and a half. And the kids stopped going to Tuesday night basketball games. They felt no connection to their school. They stopped going to Thursday night football games at Seattle Center's Memorial Stadium. They became disconnected from their schools. When you're disconnected from your schools, you lose one of the two focal points of a community, and that is school and church. And so the family said, well, this isn't working for us. They moved out to the suburbs, and it's left Seattle with being one of the most childless cities in the country, and they want to continue the jihad against people who drive cars because they're can be family people. So Jenny Durkin, this weekend, she was at a town hall, and she talked about how, yes, we are moving toward tolling every road. That is their euphemism for, or their euphemism for that is called congestion pricing.
With this grant, we're going to be able to attack both vehicles and efficiency in buildings, and it will help us analyze what we think we need to do going into the future, which is congestion pricing. We know we have to do a lot of outreach, and we have to gain the data on that. We know that we cannot roll it out without addressing the very strong equity concerns. This will allow us to do that work to see how we can do it. But if you look across the globe, those cities that have implemented congestion pricing have had the greatest success on getting people out of vehicles and reducing vehicles in city.
Yes, that is what it's all about, getting you out of a vehicle. So if you are a suburban family, you're a parent, you work in the city, they want to punish you because they despise what your family's all about. Because the more connected a community is, and again, it's church and schools that best connect communities. And when you don't have connected communities, it is much easier for government to control you. Because it is through those community events that seem to galvanize people, bring us together. And so it's very much a calculated strategy to destroy the ability of families to exist in Seattle. And they've succeeded. We are the second most childless city in the United States of America. San Francisco's number one. Seattle's number two. The second most childless city in the United States of America. Wasn't that way when I was a kid? We had thriving neighborhoods and community schools. We are the most unchurched city in the United States. And so the two things that tend to bring communities together, instead, you've got just a bunch of people who are sitting on their computer for 12 hours a day writing Facebook posts about how much they despise Donald Trump. Ah, I hate him. I hate that Cheeto-faced man. Ah! Well, that becomes pretty easy population to control if you're government, which is why Seattle has fallen so far into the toilet. But so anyway, Michael Bloomberg, former New York City mayor, he gave Seattle the American Cities Climate Challenge, a grant. And that's where, oh, Jenny Durkin said, okay, we'll push for toll roads everywhere, congestion pricing. That's part one. But then listen to, I really find it hard to believe. I didn't know much about Jenny Durkin before she became mayor. And I know she supposedly was a U.S. attorney. But as a politician, she says stuff that is just babble. It's like she has a socialist word machine, and she gives it the broadest of concepts and then just spews out nonsense as long as it has the right buzzwords, the right far left buzzwords.
We also know that climate change impacts those who can least afford it and are most disadvantaged, not just in America, but across the globe. If you look at the droughts and the famines and the number of people having to flee countries because of that, that is a direct result of a changing climate.
Okay. So droughts and famines around the globe are a direct result of a changing climate. What about here in Seattle, Jenny?
If you look in our own city, where the people tend to are most poor live, they're dealing with the environmental burdens. And so we have to take that into consideration as we form our own climate plans.
What? So the people who are most poor in our city, they have to disproportionately deal with climate problems? So people in South Park, do they have more extreme weather than the people in Laurelhurst? Because I wasn't aware of that. Down in down the Central District? Well, Central District's pretty gentrified. White Center. How about White Center? In White Center, is it 120 degrees in the summer and 12 below in the winter? But it's a nice, even 74 in Windermere. I didn't realize until Jenny Durkin started babbling along that our various neighborhoods are dealing with the effects of climate change. Let me double check that.
If you look in our own city, where the people tend to are most poor live, they're dealing with the environmental burdens. And so we have to take that into consideration as we form our own climate plans.
They're dealing with the most burdens, and so we have to take that into consideration. It's all nonsense, except that none of them believe climate change, man-caused, is a real issue. They just know that if they say enough social justice-y phrases along the way, that it'll be a way to take money from a bunch of people and redistribute it to a bunch of others. It's the socialist way. I did appreciate at the beginning of that Jenny Durkin soundbite how she said, now in 2018, that the world is finally starting to deal with the effects of climate change. Listen to that again.
We also know that climate change impacts those who can least afford it and are most disadvantaged, not just in America, but across the globe. If you look at the droughts and the famines and the number of people having to flee countries because of that.
The number of people who have to flee countries because of drought and famine. You know what, Jenny? I know you're tossing it out like that's something new, that's new thinking in 2018. I can tell you with certainty, people like Sam Kinison were talking about this issue 35 years ago, back in the early 80s.
Listen to my guy there, he goes, hey, you know, we just drove 750 miles across the desert with your food, and it occurred to us that there wouldn't be world hunger if you people would live where the food is!
It's just the same stuff that people like Kinison were talking about 35 years ago. Not much has changed. Back then, it was global warming, then the globe stopped warming. Then it became climate change, and none of these people truly believe what they are saying. They don't believe what they're talking about. Man, Jenny Durkin, she was busy this week. Oh, before I get to the climate change thing, how about this? NASA launched a satellite to measure Earth's ice changes. A Delta II rocket that was able to accurately determine how much the oceans are rising. They say the melt from the ice sheets alone has raised global sea level by 1/25 of an inch a year lately. Huh? Al Gore was telling us we were going to be underwater in Manhattan. That Microsoft guy who comes on my show and says we're going to be extinct as a species in 10 years if we don't act now. And now I find out that, according to the Associated Press this weekend and the folks at NASA's Earth Science Division, they say that the global sea level rose by 4/100 of an inch a year. So if we presumably didn't do much of anything, if it kept going on that line, it would raise by 1 inch in 25 years? That doesn't sound that calamitous to me. 1 inch in 25 years? And, of course, what can we do here as a state? Well, Jay Inslee wants us to pass a $1 billion a year carbon tax, which would affect the planet by nothing. Because Washington State, I've given you the numbers, we contribute roughly 1/10,000th of 1% of global carbon emissions. So statistically, we have zero impact on global climate emissions, and Inslee wants $1 billion a year. Story in the Seattle Times today. If Washington voters okay a carbon pollution fee, who decides how to spend all that money? Well, what do you know? It's going to be spent on expanding government. A massive expansion of government for zero benefit in return to the planet. Now, as I've told you, we are, through the free markets, we are moving dramatically toward electric cars. In about 10 years, most vehicles will be electric. The free market is taking care of it. We don't need the guiding hand of government. We don't need Jenny Durkin to tell us that the people in White Center are suffering more than the people in Laurelhurst on top of all of this. What an absolute scam we are surrounded by every second of every day in this nut house. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We're going to check the bottom of the hour news, and then I'm going to talk to that guy who is Caucasian, but he claims he's minority so he can get some contracts. I'll see what that's all about when he joins us next on the Dory Monson Show. Well, if you were listening last week, you heard a news story that kind of set me off. It's the story of a Linwood man who has an insurance company out there, Orion Insurance Group, and he used a home DNA test because he wanted to qualify as a minority business owner. And if you saw a picture of Ralph Taylor, you'd know that he looks like a white guy. If you read the results of his DNA test, you would see that he physically is pretty much a white guy. 90% European, 6% indigenous American, 4% sub-Saharan African. So I wanted to find out what I was missing here as I was getting set off by this story. So the man in question is Ralph Taylor. He joins us here on Cairo Radio. Ralph, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
No problem.
Okay, so tell me why you were pursuing a minority status for somebody who has never suffered the indignities and the challenges of being a minority in a white world.
I thought the thing that started this was I had ran across a person that had, who was visually Caucasian, and he had gotten benefits and gotten a large grant of money, and I looked into it, and I saw that, you know, I figured if he's a minority, and I'd already ran my DNA, and it wasn't a home DNA. It was through a lab that I went to and gave them a chain of custody, so it's not a home that you just call in and
right. And
do it. And they were a state and federally certified lab. And I submitted my information to the state. They denied me. I challenged them and said that based on the law has nothing to do with looks. And there's tens of thousands of visually Caucasian males that have been certified across the country.
So let me make sure I understand. So were you doing this to secure the benefits for yourself of a minority-owned business, or were you doing it to say it's ludicrous that we're giving minority status and preferential status to people like me who have not been challenged at all by being minority?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, your motivation for this, was it that you wanted
the motivation to be, the motivation to begin with was that I, you know, there, I looked inside the system and there, you know, we've audited multiple states or I've audited multiple states and I saw that there's thousands, tens of thousands of visually Caucasian males that are, you know, getting benefits. So then, you know, I'd already done the DNA, so I got, you know, the DNA, so I applied. And to begin with, it was for the economic benefit, but then I saw the hypocrisy of the system and the corruption of the system, and I chose to just bring it to light. And obviously, I've brought it to light because I'm on the phone with you.
Right.
And I got a national interview in another hour.
And I understand the hypocrisy part of it, but you said a moment ago that you wanted to benefit from your minority status. Clearly, the reason they give any preferential treatment to minority businesses is because they have suffered some sort of slight attached to their minority status. Have you ever been slighted?
Based on what? I'm
telling you, that's the perception.
I understand, Dory, but based on what the law, there is no objective law for socioeconomic disadvantage. There's already a court case, Western States Paving versus the U.S. DOT, where the Ninth Circuit ruled that socioeconomic disadvantage is not tailored to just specific minorities. It's anyone can be disadvantaged.
No,
let
me say right up front, I don't like any of these programs. I think that everybody should be judged based on their business plan, their competency, their ability to get jobs done on time and on budget. And I don't think we should have set-asides for people based on their race. So I agree with you on that. But you and I both know that the intent of this business is to lift up what they call disadvantaged communities. Now, you and I can agree or disagree on whether they're truly disadvantaged, but that is the intent of the business. And it sounds like you were trying to exploit the intent to begin with
was honorable, but now it's been corrupted. It's morally bankrupt. It's being gamed. I'm showing that it can be gamed. I could have gotten my birth certificate. If I wanted to, I could have gotten my birth certificate, I'm assuming, changed at any point in time I wanted to, and then just put it through and gotten it. And if I hadn't have gone the path I've gone, we wouldn't be talking. I would have just gotten the certification and taken the money.
Look,
but I chose to take this path.
You could right now today in Washington State. This is how far gone we are as a region. You can go and change your gender on your birth certificate today. Even if you've lived every second of your life as a man, you could go to the State Department of Records, say, hey, put on my certificate that I was a woman at birth. And I assume that would qualify you for any programs that give female-owned businesses an advantage.
That's correct. And when I changed my birth certificate, I called into the state, and now I'm certified, and my birth certificate makes me certified black in all 50 states because they recognize birth certificates as tools of ethnicity. I called in, and when I called in, the person who was changing the certificate asked me if I wanted to change my sex as well. So I chose to just keep my sex as male, but I could have gone from, you know, what my birth certificate said prior to being, you know, black, Native American, Caucasian, female.
But the system is
broken.
So what you're saying is, because your DNA test revealed, as I said, 90% European, presumably Caucasian, 6% indigenous American, and 4% mm-hmm. sub-Saharan African. So you're telling me if you're 1/25th sub-Saharan African, that's going to qualify you to be a black business owner?
Well, tribes have the ability to admit anyone they want into the tribe, whether or not you have any indigenous American heritage whatsoever. So tribes right now are enrolling people, and you can check with the Bureau of Indian Affairs with this. They can enroll a Caucasian male for whatever reason, be it financial or political favors, and that person now gets the benefits. You saw in that article there's a Native American who's 1/256 Native American, and I'm 6%, but there's a 3% deviation, so I'm either 9 or 3, but this guy is 1/256, which is 1/10 of 1% Native American. So does he deserve?
Look, we have a United States Senator, Elizabeth Warren, who tried pulling the same nonsense, and she claims to be Native American, when clearly she's not, but she used that to try to gain some advantage in the halls of academia. So what was your bottom line here, Ralph? Is it to gain benefits from being a minority or to exploit and demonstrate the absurdity of the system?
To begin with, it was to I was looking at the benefits, but as I said, once I saw how deeply entrenched this corruption, in my opinion, is, I just chose to take the path I did, knowing that it would eventually come out and it'd be exposed. And I'm not, my opinion is I'm going to win the Ninth Circuit, or there's going to be, business owners and lawyers listen to this, and they're going to go out and get their birth certificate amended, and this is going to be so diluted that it breaks either way. So it's my objective. Like I said, I've got an interview with the national news media in another hour, and the system's going to have to get adjusted to where we're no longer, the Martin Luther King. We're not going to judge each other on the color of our skin, but the content of our character.
Right.
And because we can't come up with objective criteria to define who we are as, we're human beings, and we're fighting over genetic mutations, and blue eyes is a genetic mutation, skin color is a genetic mutation. Those are, they're just genetic mutations. At the end of the day, we're all in this together.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, and we're becoming more and more of a melting pot, and in 70 years it's going to increase exponentially. But would you accept the benefits if you were able to secure minority status?
I'm a businessman. I'm going to do what I can to, to be a businessman and win in business.
Is that honorable?
If it's,
yeah, I mean, because I like dealing with honorable, ethical people. And if you think you have found...
Do you think it's not honorable to work within the rules of the game?
I'm going to continue my question, then I'll answer yours. I think that it's dishonorable for somebody who has lived their whole life as a white guy and has, if there are benefits to that, whatever they may be,
Who's lived their whole life as a white guy?
You have.
No, I haven't. I've always known I'm multiracial. My oral history is that I'm multiracial.
In what way has you being sub-Saharan African manifested itself in your life?
How is it manifest in anybody's life?
You just told me that you've lived.
It's a fair
question. How has it manifested itself in your life?
What is the cultural or sociological aspects of being, black?
Well, I'm just following up your question. You said you've always lived as a multicultural guy. How? Give me an example of how you lived a multicultural life.
Well, I'll ask you. Tell me what it means to live your life as a. Live your life. What does it mean to live your life as a black man?
I don't know. I'm not a black man. And neither are you.
How can you ask me a question if you don't even know the answer to it?
Because I'm a white guy like you.
You're making a subjective opinion, Dory.
I'm asking you. You're the one who told me, Ralph. No. You're the one who told me that you've always lived a multicultural life. I'm not playing that game. I'm not saying that I have. Just tell me, how has that manifested itself? How have you lived a multicultural life?
You have to define what it means. If you can't define what it means, then it doesn't matter.
You're the one who told me that. You said 4 minutes ago,
I've lived my life knowing that through my oral history, what my ancestry is. So, does I like hip hop? I like,
do you?
Various food groups.
Who are your favorite hip hop artists? Who are your favorite hip hop artists?
Snoop Dogg.
Okay, who else? Give me two more.
50 Cent.
Uh huh.
Dr. Dre. What do you want?
Well, you went for the.
I'm asking you a legitimate question. What does it mean to live your life as a black American?
I don't know. I'm not a black American.
Then why are you asking me a question?
Because
that
you claim
don't know
to
the
be.
Answer to?
And you're not a black American, but you claim to be.
I'm working within the law. The law says there is no objective criteria.
And I'm working within the bounds of common sense.
Well, again, I'm looking at your picture. You look Asian to me.
Okay.
You don't.
That's fine.
Yeah, but you're not going to be able to using the objective law. I mean, that's the whole thing here, is it?
I don't want to use anything. What? Why do I want to use something? I'd rather just I've accomplished everything without claiming some bogus minority status.
Create hate, or do you think they create? Bring us together.
All I know is I judge everybody not by their skin color. I have a wide variety of friends.
And
I've accomplished everything in my life without claiming some bogus minority status. It seems to me you're trying to claim some bogus minority status.
How am I claiming it if there's tens of thousands of people that are already doing it?
You're seeking.
Bogus, but you're asking me on object. You can't give me any objective criteria. If you can't give me any objective criteria, the feds can't give me any.
You want federal grants. You want local and federal grants that are only available to minority-owned business. You're a white guy who's claimed those.
Business.
You're 90% white, and you've lived every day of your life as a white guy.
I'm certified by the state of Washington as a minority-owned business.
Okay, I feel like we're just going round and round here, but I want to dive deeper into this, the ethics of this. So hold on, Ralph. We're talking with Ralph Peters. He's an insurance agent out in Linwood, and I'd like to know what you think about all this. I know he's just trying to make a point. Why are we giving a break to anybody based on their ethnicity? I know that's the point he's trying to make. Text me, the Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. That's 98973. We'll continue with the conversation with Ralph next on the Dory Monson Show. We're talking with Ralph Peters. He's an insurance agent out in Linwood. He's trying to gain federal and local grants based on minority status. He took a DNA test, found he was 6% sub-Saharan African, 4% Native American, and he's lived his life as a white man, but he says, no, I should get a piece of that pie now, too. And my question for you, Ralph, is, do you think that's an ethical way to do business?
You know what the overall feedback from my customers is? They think I'm in the right.
Okay.
So the majority of the people say that, you know what, this system has to be exposed. So if you want to continue the system of division, then that's your problem.
I told you at the beginning. I don't like set-asides. I don't like quotas.
How will we get rid of the set-asides?
We've had laws in our state. We've had citizen initiatives, and then the state gradually finds a way to weasel them back in.
I guess this is going to accomplish that objective too, because it's going to dilute the system so bad that it's not going to work.
So,
and then everybody moves on.
Okay, so but you don't think it would be a competitively sleazy thing to do if you were to get a minority federal grant cash for your business and your competitor across the street?
I am a minority. I mean, you have to be careful. I am a minority in the state of Washington.
No, you've never lived your life as a minority person. You don't look minority.
I've lived my life as a multiracial person. Who are you to judge, Dory?
How has it negative impacted you?
Negatively impacted anyone?
I'm asking you.
I mean, this is
the whole point of
reasoning.
The whole point of these programs.
You're not willing to point something out that has a negative impact. I mean, there's people that are multimillionaires that are inside this system. So how are they? You know, if Michael Jordan's son was to apply to this, he would get through. How has he been socially and economically disadvantaged?
Are a lot of people.
I've got a single mother client whose son was a 4.0 valedictorian. They had messed up his paperwork, and he was coded as a black American. They came and gave him a bunch of benefits, and then they found out he was.
Okay.
He was Caucasian.
That's all fine. I just believe that I wouldn't want to achieve things by claiming to be something I'm not.
In what you believe and what the law are two different things.
Yeah.
Live in the by the rule of law.
There are a lot of business people, Ralph, who will exploit the law at any cost just so that they can gain an edge. Personally, I don't think that's an ethical way to do business. It doesn't mean it's illegal. It's just not ethical. And if
I wanted to have gotten my birth certificate amended a long time ago, we wouldn't be having this conversation, Dory.
Sure would.
I'd just be going along.
Sure would. If you said that you were a woman.
No, if I wanted to get my, you know, if I chose to get it done earlier, maybe that it would have gotten through without this becoming the issue that it's becoming.
Okay.
And you're asking me subjective questions when we live in an objective, by the objective rule of law.
No, you're playing games because you want to game the system. And I live in a world. I live in a world where I think ethics mean something, and I would not go around telling people that I'm black or Asian or a woman if just to get some kind of financial advantage. When my life's worked out just fine the way it is.
Oh, that's good.
Thanks. Okay, Ralph. Look, I enjoyed talking with you about this. I disagree with you, but I appreciate that you're willing to spar with me on this one.
No. Call me anytime.
Okay. All right, Ralph. Thanks for coming on.
All right.
Okay. Ralph Taylor, he owns Orion Insurance Group out there in Linwood. I would love to know what you think about all of this. You can text me. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. Give me your thoughts on all this, and I will check the news for you here at the top of the hour, and then the Fastest 15 is coming up next.